Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at something that I think you're going to find really, really interesting, and that is how therapists actually detect microaggressions as they're happening in therapy sessions.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So we're going to be looking at this 2018 research article called An Experimental Test of Microaggression Detection in Psychotherapy.
Okay.
And this was published in Professional Psychology, Research and Practice, a journal of the APA.
Great.
So, you know, the idea is, can therapists actually identify these microaggressions as they're happening? And how do we even go about studying something like that?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, we're talking about these really subtle, sometimes even unintentional moments that can have such a big impact.
Absolutely. And the researchers in this study actually used video vignettes of therapy sessions.
Oh, wow.
So they had one vignette with microaggressions and then another vignette that was more neutral. And they wanted to see if therapists could actually pinpoint these tricky interactions.
Fascinating. So it's almost like they're trying to test a therapist's sensitivity radar.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how attuned are they to these really subtle cues?
Which is so crucial in the therapy room.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we go any further, let's just like make sure we're all on the same page about what we even mean by microaggressions.
Yeah, good idea.
So imagine like a therapist complimenting a client of color on their articulate speech as if they're surprised by it.
Right.
Or, you know, telling a client who's sharing their struggles with racism that maybe they're being too sensitive.
Yeah, those are classic examples.
Yeah, these are like classic textbook examples of microaggressions. And they might seem small on the surface.
They do.
But they can actually be so invalidating and damaging.
Especially in a setting like therapy where the client is already feeling vulnerable.
Exactly, exactly. And these kinds of interactions can actually create what we call like ruptures
in
the therapeutic alliance.
I see.
So think of it as like a crack in that foundation of trust and connection.
Right, that makes sense.
Between the therapist and client.
Yeah, because if that trust is broken, it's going to be really hard to move forward.
Absolutely. And what's kind of scary is that the study actually found that microaggressions are more common than we might think.
Really?
Yeah. So between 53 and 81% of minority clients report experiencing at least one microaggression from their therapist.
Wow. That's huge.
It's a lot.
So it's definitely something that therapists need to be aware of and know how to address.
Yeah. So it's crucial for therapists to be able to both recognize these moments as they're happening.
Okay.
And then also to repair the ruptures that they cause.
Repair. Yeah. So that's about acknowledging the harm that's been done and taking steps to rebuild that trust.
Right. And what's really interesting is that this study found that therapists could often sense when a session felt insensitive.
Okay.
But they had a harder time actually pinpointing the specific microaggressions as they happened.
Interesting. So they knew something was off,
yeah,
but they couldn't quite put their finger on why.
Exactly. And only about half of the therapists in the study could spot at least one of the three microaggressions that were embedded in the video.
It
was like, you know, that famous gorilla in the room experiment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where people are so focused on counting basketball passes that they completely miss a gorilla walking through the scene.
Exactly. It's fascinating how our brains can just like filter out information, even really important stuff.
Yeah.
If we're not actively paying attention to it.
Right. We're primed to see certain things and then we miss other things.
Yeah. And in this case, you know, maybe the therapists were so focused on like the client's symptoms or like the techniques they were using that they missed those subtle cues that signal a microaggression.
Right. It's like that inattentional blindness.
Yeah, exactly.
Our attention is a limited resource. It makes you wonder, though, like what happens next?
Yeah.
Even if a therapist does recognize a microaggression in the moment, do they address it?
Right.
Do they try to repair the rupture or do they just kind of let it slide?
Yeah, because spotting it is one thing.
Right.
But knowing how to respond to it effectively, that's a whole other challenge.
Absolutely. Especially in the therapy room where the power dynamics are already so complex.
Exactly. And this is where the study's findings get kind of concerning.
Ooh.
They actually cited another piece of research that found that 76% of clients who had experienced a microaggression from their therapist said it was never even discussed.
That's a lot.
That's a huge number.
Yeah.
So not only are therapists maybe missing these moments.
Right.
But even when they do see them, they're often not addressing them.
Yeah. It makes you wonder what gets in the way of that repair process.
Yeah. Like, what's the barrier there? Why is it so hard for some therapists to acknowledge these missteps?
That's a great question. And it's something that researchers are still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Part of it might be discomfort with talking about race and culture.
I can see that.
You know, maybe some therapists worry about saying the wrong thing or making the situation worse.
Right. It's a sensitive topic for sure.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of self-awareness and humility on the part of the therapist.
Absolutely.
But avoiding the conversation altogether can actually be more damaging in the long run.
I think that's true. You know, unaddressed microaggressions can really erode trust.
Yeah.
They can make clients feel unseen and unheard.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, they undermine the whole therapeutic process.
So recognizing a microaggression is just the first step.
Right.
The real work, the real healing happens when those moments are addressed openly and constructively.
I agree. And that requires therapists to have a certain level of skill and confidence.
So let's talk about training.
Okay.
If we know therapists are struggling with this, what can we do to better equip them? What kind of training do you think could make a real difference?
Well, I think first and foremost, we need to go beyond just teaching therapists to define microaggressions.
Oh,
You know,
right.
they need to learn how to actually recognize them in real time.
In that nuanced context of a therapy session.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So less textbook definitions
Yeah.
and more practical scenario-based learning.
So, like role-playing case studies, watching videos of actual sessions.
Exactly. Anything that can help therapists develop that microaggression radar that we talked about earlier.
And it's not just about recognizing the behavior, right? It's also about knowing how to respond in a way that's authentic and effective.
Totally. Repairing ruptures caused by microaggressions requires a very specific set of skills.
Like what?
While therapists need to learn how to acknowledge the harm without minimizing it,
Oh.
validate the client's feelings, and take responsibility for their actions.
That makes sense. And this kind of training needs to be ongoing too, right? It can't just be like a one-time workshop.
I agree. It should be a continuous process of learning and growth.
Because cultural competency is a journey, not a destination.
Well said. Therapists need to be constantly engaging in self-reflection, seeking feedback, and staying up to date on the latest research.
Yeah. You know, one thing that struck me about this particular study is that it focused specifically on racial and ethnic microaggressions. But these kinds of subtle moments of harm can happen across any marginalized identity, right?
Absolutely. We could be talking about microaggressions related to gender, sexual orientation, religion, disability, body size. The list goes on.
So I'm wondering if these findings about therapists struggling to detect and repair microaggressions might apply even more broadly.
That's a really good point. I think it's something we definitely need to consider.
Yeah.
You know, the dynamics might be slightly different depending on the specific identity being targeted,
Sure.
but the underlying principles of recognizing and addressing harm are universal.
So therapists need to be sensitive to all forms of microaggressions, not just those based on race and ethnicity.
Exactly. Effective therapy requires us to be attuned to the unique experiences and vulnerabilities of all of our clients.
It's about creating a space where everyone feels seen, heard, and respected for who they are.
Well said.
Okay, so we've talked about the problem and we've touched on some potential solutions in terms of training, but what about the individual therapist? What can they do on a day-to-day basis to improve their own sensitivity and responsiveness to these forms of harm?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think it all starts with self-awareness. You know, therapists need to be willing to examine their own biases, assumptions, and blind spots.
So much of what we do as therapists hinges on that self-awareness, huh? Being able to recognize our own stuff so we don't accidentally project it onto our clients.
Exactly. And it's not like a one and done kind of thing. You know, it's not like we achieve self-awareness and then we're done.
Right. It's an ongoing process.
It's something we have to cultivate every single day.
So what does that look like in practice?
Yeah.
How can therapists actually like strengthen that muscle when it comes to something as sensitive as microaggressions?
Well, one really powerful tool is mindfulness. You know, taking that time to pause, to really notice our thoughts and feelings.
And how does that help with microaggressions specifically?
Well, if we're more aware of our own internal state, we're more likely to pick up on those subtle cues in our clients that might signal a microaggression has occurred.
Like what kind of cues?
Maybe they withdraw slightly, or their facial expression changes, their tone of voice shifts.
Right. It's about paying attention to all those nonverbal signals.
Exactly. And we might miss those if we're not fully present.
Mindfulness helps us stay attuned to their whole being.
Yeah, not just their words.
And it can also help us catch ourselves right. Like if we notice a judgment or an assumption arising in our own minds, mindfulness can help us pause before we act on it.
Absolutely. It gives us that space to choose a more skillful response.
So mindfulness is one tool. What else can therapists do to kind of boost that self-awareness?
Another important practice is seeking regular supervision or consultation.
Oh, yeah.
Having a safe space to process challenging cases, get feedback, and explore different perspectives.
It's like having a sounding board.
Exactly. Someone who can help us see our blind spots.
And challenge those assumptions that we might not even realize we have.
Exactly. And it can be incredibly valuable, especially when we're working with clients from cultures different from our own.
Because we all have those blind spots, no matter how experienced or well-intentioned we are.
Absolutely. We all have our own biases and limitations, and supervision can really help keep us accountable.
You know, as we're talking about all of this, I'm realizing that cultural humility plays a huge role here, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's that willingness to acknowledge that we don't have all the answers and that our clients are truly the experts on their own lived experience.
Yeah, I think cultural humility is essential for creating a safe and welcoming therapeutic space.
It's about approaching our clients with curiosity and openness.
And being willing to learn from them.
Letting go of the need to be the expert all the time.
And embracing the idea that we're always students, you know, always growing and evolving.
And that's a beautiful thing because it means we're constantly expanding our understanding of the human experience.
I love that.
This whole conversation has been a real eye-opener for me. I've been thinking about my own practice in a new light.
Me too.
And as always, it gives me some things to work on.
That's the beauty of these deep dives. They challenge us to think critically, to question our assumptions, and to always strive to do better for our clients.
Well said. And as we wrap up today's deep dive, I want to leave you, our listener, with something to ponder. Thinking about your own experiences in therapy, what do you think might help therapists get better at spotting these moments of harm? What advice would you give to therapists who are striving to create a more culturally sensitive and responsive environment? Keep exploring, keep questioning, and as always, keep diving deep.